is Tennessee Talks with United States Congressman Tim Burchett.
Hey, everybody. It's Congressman Tim Burchett back for another exciting episode of Tennessee Talks. Appreciate my folks at Rumble right there for hosting us. Today, I'm incredibly honored to have a dear friend of mine in Congress. It's my buddy Eli Crane from the great state of Arizona. And he is, everybody knows what he's about and where he comes from. Navy SEAL, patriot, member of Congress, just a great friend to me. And I'm delighted to have him on the show. And he was not picked, oddly enough, to be on the so-called select committee for on this assassination deal. And the irony of that is we've got three actual snipers that are in Congress, and Eli just happens to be one of them. And I was glad he would come on and talk to me a little bit about what's going on. You know, I don't like any of this garbage. It kind of ticks me off the way we do this thing, and playing politics with this thing is no way. Get the best. I've always said, just put the best players in, coach, and the best player is clearly my buddy Eli Crane. Eli, thank you for being on here, brother. I appreciate you. Tell us a little bit about the journey that you all took to get to forming this committee real fast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Tim. It's always good to be on your show. Yeah, so anyway, as you mentioned, Congress does have an official task force. You know, we're going to continue to participate in any way that we can. I talked to the chairman actually last night. Myself and Corey Mills might be helping that committee out. They do have subpoena power, so they've got a lot of resources that we don't. But we decided, Corey Mills, myself, Matt Gaetz, Chip Roy, you know, we decided that we were going to form, you know, a supplemental task force, if you will, to try and get to the bottom of what took place on J-13. And as we now know, is more than one event. And there continue to be attempts on President Trump's life. We know that there's other threats of attacks on the president. And so this is one of those times where I think not only do we need to continue to investigate and have a bunch of groups investigating, but we need to continue to put pressure on the Secret Service to make sure that regardless of what candidate we're talking about or what party we're talking about, this type of thing, you know, is almost impossible to happen because of the security profile around the president.
What is the most glaring problem you saw in all that, in both assassination attempts?
The most glaring problem is so obvious to me, Tim. It's that we've been lucky at this point that they have not sent professionals after the president. You know, you take Thomas Crooks, a 20-year-old kid with no military experience, and then you take this Ruth guy, and I can just tell, you know, just by their setup, that neither one of them were professionals. Obviously, Crooks had, you know, got was a lot more successful in how close he got to assassinating the president. But when I look at Mr. Ruth and how he set up, you know, in sniper terminology, we would call that his where he set up by the fence. We would call that his final firing position, or FFP. And a couple things that I looked at stuck out to me, telling me, showing me that he was not a professional. And that was a couple things. When you're a sniper or an assassin and you're set up in an ambush situation like that, you don't want anything on your body or in the vicinity of you to look, you know, unnatural. And by the two ballistic plates that he set up on the fence, those two dark plates that you saw right from the pictures, I could tell that he didn't know what he was doing.
You wear those, right? Those are the kind that they wear. Yeah. When I was county mayor, I found the money to buy our deputies those, and I realized that they were, you know, undergunned, I guess you'd say, or underprotected, and we found the money to purchase those.
Yeah, the other thing I noticed him was that had he been a professional, what he would have wanted to do was he wanted to sit as far back into the shadows as possible so that he couldn't silhouette himself or any part of his gear. And according to the story that we've heard, the Secret Service agent actually discovered him because he was sticking his rifle barrel through the fence. And Had he been trained, what he probably would have done, what I would have done in that situation, Tim, is I would have had some bolt cutters on my bag. Shears and bolt cutters are things that snipers often carry in their kit. And I would have just cut a loophole, what we call, in the fence.
Right.
So that, the fence could not have prevented my bullet from getting from myself to my target. And that would have allowed me to sit back, or Ruth to sit back in that spot without having to expose himself. And the other thing, too, I noticed was the weapon he chose, the weapon of choice, was not a very professional weapon.
Filed the numbers off, which to me is, it's a felony. That's what they originally popped him for. I knew they were doing that just to hold him so they could get the other stuff on him. But to file the numbers off to me was, it was amateur hour. He was using it to commit a felony anyway. It's not going to, all he does is put more on him. I couldn't figure out the reasoning behind that, unless maybe he just purchased it off the street and the numbers were already filed.
Well, it's possible that, if he was an asset and if he was being handled, he wouldn't want to give evidence to, where he acquired the weapon, what region it came from, if that serial number was able to be tracked anywhere.
Right. One other thing that I wanted to ask you about was the drones. I always talk about this. I go to these high school football games when I get back in Tennessee, East Tennessee, every weekend, every Friday or Thursday or Friday. And they have drones. Literally, this guy flew this thing over my head. And as you can tell by the camera, I have incredibly well-coiffed hair, as you've complimented me on numerous times in the past. But, this dude put this thing right over my head, Eli, and could see the part in my hair. And to think that we didn't use that technology, which school kids have. My daughter has a drone with capabilities of camera. How does this... And no heat signature stuff. And then I heard somebody say, "Well, you couldn't have spotted the heat signature and that's just not accurate." I think you could spot the heat signature, and they should have had drones flying over. It just seems so. And they said that in the very first occasion, and that's what really bothers me, because they said under the first shooting, this kid had drones, we didn't, and they were on like a 1-800 number calling the drone people to figure out how to work the thing. That should have stopped it right there. But then the second time, again, no drones, nothing flying over where Trump was playing golf.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that is so, eye-opening about this entire thing, Tim, is that, I noticed when I got to Butler the first time when I went to check out the site with Homeland Security Committee, that there were no counter snipers in the water tower. And why that would have been important is because one of the biggest jobs of a counter sniper is to observe. In that instance, another one of the priorities is deterrence, because had Thomas Crooks or anybody that had ill intent against the president, had they seen, counter snipers up in that water tower, it's a big deterrent, because they realize I might not even get these shots off at my target before I'm executed or taken out. And that really deters people. But the other one, Tim, is observation, right? And, there was nobody in that water tower. Nobody even went up to check out the water tower, even though it was the tallest structure.
And it could have been another sniper there, not a counter sniper, but
right.
A sniper.
But to go back to your point, had they even had drones that are mobile and could move around the entire property at a height advantage where they could look down on everything, they would have had that much more situational awareness on it, what or if any threats presented themselves to the president or to the crowd. And to your point, the Secret Service, we're learning now that they had technical difficulty with one of their drones,
right?
Because the operator only received a couple hours of training, which just goes to show how broken that organization is.
I think with the Secret Service, brother, the first shooting was, you saw agents that were half, they were head and shoulders below. I made the, I'm from East Tennessee, so I said, we should have had a bunch of Trace Adkins type size people guarding President Trump. Instead, we had Kenny Chesney size, and Kenny's a buddy of mine, but he's short, and they had short folks. They had folks couldn't put their guns in their holsters. They had folks hiding behind the pile, cowering, if you will. And now we don't even know if they were even Secret Service agents. We think that they were probably, some of those were Homeland Security folks. And so There was no cohesiveness there. There was no radio contact. They said when they said the shots, you know, you could spot somebody up there, and they were seeing local police officers running with their guns. The Secret Service agent, I think one of them said, well, we didn't even think to call to keep Trump off the stage. So I just, the whole thing, they need to be gutted, I think. And to think that we're going to bring somebody else that's come through the ranks of this mentality, of that structure, that's going to do anything any different to us, I think is laughable. And we're going to cost somebody their life.
That was one thing I asked Dan Bongino during the hearing that we did at Heritage, Tim. Right. I asked him, is the Secret Service, in your professional opinion, as an agent that worked there for a long time, is the Secret Service in a better place? Are the protectees in a better place with Director Rowe, Acting Director Rowe, replacing Cheadle? And he said, absolutely not. And another thing that I found very interesting and so alarming at the same time is when we talked to Eric Prince, one of the things that he pointed out, which goes in line with my statements about them not sending professionals, he talked about how a 20-year-old kid with no military experience bested the Secret Service with a multi-billion-dollar budget. Right. He said, what happens if
$3 billion a year.
What happens if a five-man Hezbollah team is sent to, you know, come after the president or any other public official? Because let's be honest, Tim, President Trump isn't the only elected official with a bounty on their head right now. You know, I know Nikki Haley, John Bolton, and others have bounties on their head as well. So we're not just talking about one individual. And that's why this is so important.
Well, a lot of questions to be answered, and they're not really going to be answered here, I don't think, but we need to get to the bottom of it. Eli, thank you, brother. You know, the Tim Burchetts of the world are a dime a dozen, but the Eli Cranes are one in a million, folks. This country is very fortunate that
That's actually the only false thing you've said.
No, brother, let me talk. This is my show. I'm going to edit you out.
No.
But this guy is a true American hero. You know, in this country, we put a lot of faith and a lot of pride in our athletes and all these people that, you know. And to me, my heroes have always been people that have worn our country's uniform. Daddy fought in the Pacific, as y'all know, and Mama lost her brother in Europe, and she flew an airplane during the war. And my wife's deceased husband, biological father of my child, Isabel, is a Navy Master Chief. So everything I have in my life, you know, I've said this many times, but as a Christian, I owe everything in my life to the men and women that wore our country's uniform.
That sounds like
except for my salvation, brother.
That sounds like a country song, Tim.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe it ought to be. But if it's me singing it, it'll probably go aluminum. But anyway, folks, you've been really blessed today, because I got my guy in here to tell us exactly what the heck's going on. And it just shows you how important these elections are. 13-14% of y'all end up only ones going to the polls, we could lose our dadgum country. And folks like Eli and my daddy, and of course my uncle, who never got to come home, made some incredible sacrifices. And let's just not throw all that away. Again, I'm Tim Burchett, Congressman. Thank y'all for watching another episode of Tennessee Talks. Thank you, Rumble, again. And as always, thank you all for seeing me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Tennessee Talks. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Keep up with Congressman Burchett by following Rep. Tim Burchett on Twitter and Instagram, and Congressman Tim Burchett on Facebook and YouTube.